We're doing a review of the Drashot Aran, and we had learned the first drasha, which discussed creation. And the Aran had told us a few very interesting concepts. The Aran began with the concept that the whole is greater than its components. And then he said that teaches us the concept of tzibul. This concept is why we say that tzibul is a great thing, because the tzibul has all the components. And in passing, he also mentioned that that's why Moshe was punished, because he spoke to the tzibul, he spoke to the congregation and said Shimuna Amorim, even though it was really individuals who had rebelled. It wasn't the tzibul, and he derided the whole congregation. The Ran then went on to question this concept. The Ran said, but isn't that all of Koheles' work? Isn't that the concept, the postula that Koheles is based on, that if the whole world is created of the four elements, and each of the four elements has its weaknesses, then the whole world isn't worth too much. And we just said that the whole is greater than its components. And then he explained that when you take two things that have, or two components that have the same weakness, then it hurts both of them, because they just magnify the weakness. The idea that we say the whole is greater than its components is because we say that in the whole, each component serves to fill what the other one doesn't have. And we described it like a soccer team. The offenseman, well, he can't be a good goalie. The goalie, he can't be a good offenseman. Each one has their weakness, but when they're all on one team, so each one covers for what the other one can't do. And the Ran had explained, based on this concept, that's why Chazal tell us that when we have a tzibur of Klal Yisrael, even if we have sinners, it's good for the tzibur. Because even the sinner, he has his weaknesses when they're in the tzibur. It's a benefit to the tzibur. He said, if you unify people with the same weakness, with the same bad trait, so then it magnifies the weakness and then it harms everyone. That's why when Yaakov curses the tribe of Shimon, he says, "Achalekim Yaakov, I will scatter them," because the tribe of Shimon has anger. If you have a congregation where there's no one that has anger, the congregation sometimes will be pushed around and it's not good for them. But if you take that anger and you scatter it through the congregation, then you get balance. So if the tribe of Shimon is scattered throughout the people of Israel, they'll serve to balance the people of Israel. But if the tribe of Shimon are united in one territory, then there'll be a tribe that's always quarrelsome. It'll be harmful to them and harmful to the rest of Klal Yisrael. And with this concept, he went on to explain the idea of Dor HaPalaga. He explained that Dor HaPalaga, it's difficult to understand what was going on there. So he said, yeah, here you had a situation where people had united with one goal, to serve idols. Technically, the people were united. It's a positive thing. But their goal in uniting was to ensure that there would be one monarch who would be a god. They would treat him as a god. That was Nimrod. And when everything is under one monarch and everyone's focusing on idol worship, then if people want to serve God, then they have nowhere to run, because the whole world is under this one monarch. So God had to interfere and scatter them, because the people were united to do evil. And the whole world being united to do evil is a danger to God-fearing people. God made the world with different kingdoms, Duran explained, so that when one kingdom persecutes God-fearing people, they could go to another kingdom. The danger during the time of the Dor HaPalaga was that Avram would have nowhere to run. The people who wanted to be monotheists would have nowhere to go. Everyone was united under Nimrod. And that's why God had to intervene and dismantle this unification of the Dor HaPalaga.
What is Palaga?
Palaga is the scattering. So when Koheles says that the base elements have a weakness and therefore all of the world has a weakness, what he means is they all have this weakness that they aren't eternal. We said that when you unify things with different weaknesses, then they complement one another. When you unify things that have the same weakness, then that weakness is magnified. Kohelis's point was that being that all of the world is composed of base elements which are passing, they are not eternal, so then this weakness is magnified because all the components have that weakness.
Yeah, it's like the means of Ktoret.
And then he compared it to the Ktoret. He said, in the Ktoret we have the spice of the Chelbenah, and the Chelbenah, Chazal say, is something that has a very bad smell. It's frankincense. But when you mix it with other spices, it brings out from the other spices the good senses, the good smell that they have. Meaning sometimes something on its own is bad, but mixed with other things, it can bring out their potential. And that's why in a tzibur, Chazal say, if the tzibur davens without the Rishayim, Hashem doesn't accept their tefillah as much. There has to be unification of all of Am Yisrael, including the Rishayim. We begin Yom Kippur by saying, we hereby permit even the people that had to be ostracized, even the people who were banished, even the people who did the worst sins in the most blatant way, we permit them to join us for today. Because for today we need all of Am Yisrael together in prayer. So he says, being that the congregation is such an important thing, the congregation is something that has to be honored so much, the congregation is of such value, so then we have a question. How could I speak before this congregation? He says, this is all an introduction to his speech. He says, how dare I stand up before you who are so important and speak? And furthermore, how will I speak about Ma'aseh Bereshit? Chazal tell us, whoever understands Ma'aseh Bereshit, he may not explain it because he's transgressing what our sages said. Whoever does not know, and then he tries to explain it, so he's being proud because he's making believe that he does know. So why is it that I dare speak about creation? The speech that we're going to study about is about creation, about Ma'aseh Bereshit. So he said, Hashem puts down anyone that's proud, either midah keneged midah, or because that's part of nature, that when a person goes beyond his natural ground, so he doesn't last up there, it doesn't work, or because that's nature, whatever goes up must come down. So whatever's down at some point can go up, but whatever's up at some point will go down. So he says, how can I speak about it? And then the Ran went on to explain the different aspects of Ma'aseh Bereshit. And that's where we enter the concept of metaphysics. And he said, really, there's the wisdom, is Ma'aseh Bereshit nature, or is Ma'aseh Bereshit supernatural? It's a godly understanding. So he said that Ma'aseh Bereshit is nature, but it's the wisdom of understanding what's behind nature, what we might call metaphysics. That everything that exists in this world has something behind it. That there's a reason why God created it that way, and if we understood the reason, then we'd understand everything else about this thing. Meaning, when God creates, let's take the simplest example. Let's take a human being. If we understood what was the reasoning behind creating a human being, so then we'd understand why a human being has to have two eyes, two ears, a nostril. Everything about the way a human being is created is really a derivative of the reasoning as to why God created the human being. All the natural aspects. When science does research, science can work based on stimuli. Science does experiments, and then science discovers what are the characteristics of a specific thing. What we discuss, when we discuss the wisdom of Ma'aseh Bereshit, is the wisdom that's behind that wisdom. What caused things to be created that way? And that's something which a person cannot attain on his own. He could theorize, but he might be right, he might be wrong. It's something that when God reveals it to a person, when he has a tradition that goes back to what God revealed, then he can know what the root of every item, everything that was created is, and then he can understand their physical attributes as well, because they're all derivatives of this spiritual reason. And he quoted that's why the Rambam laughed at the Greek philosopher Gallienus, who said, I've researched the human being and I understand him, I just don't understand why he laughs. I don't understand why he laughs. And the Rambam laughed at Gallienus for saying that. He said, if you understood the essence of the human being, part of the essence of the human being is that he laughs. You just don't understand the essence of why a human being was created altogether. And we said there's a marvelous thought that laughter is an intrinsic part to the creation of the human being. This is what the Rambam says. If you don't understand why a human being laughs, then you don't understand why he was created. So he said, so Ma'asev Reshit is the true understanding of nature. It's not philosophical. It's not understanding the external characteristics like science does, but it's understanding the godly reasoning behind the creation. The Ran then went on to analyze the pasuk where David HaMelech discusses his understanding. And David HaMelech, it says, really told us all of this, this whole concept David HaMelech already said. David HaMelech says in Tehillim Kuf Lamed Tes, Hashem Chakartani, Hashem, you explored me and you know. And his point was, David HaMelech was saying that we on our own, we don't understand even our own self. You ask a person, what's your body composed of? Do you know where your kidney is? Do you know where your liver is? Do you know what your liver does? Do you know what your heart does? We know whatever science taught us, but the average person doesn't even understand himself. So David HaMelech says, if I can't even understand myself, the most basic knowledge of how I function, I don't have, so certainly I can't have anything beyond that. And you, Hashem, you know me, and you know things that, not by experimentation, you know me like we discussed, God's knowledge is a knowledge because God is connected to everything. God created everything. It's not like our knowledge, which is obtained by stimuli. I see, I hear, I think, I understand. It's not that way. I comprehend. It's all external. All of our knowledge is external. God's knowledge is intimately connected. So he said, David HaMelech says, Hashem, you know me, and you know me a true knowledge. You know me not because you see me smiling. It's not that. That's not why you know I'm happy. You know me because you know me deep down inside. You know I'm happy. You know everything about me. So he says, therefore, there's no point in hiding from you because you know where everything is and there's nowhere to run. And you know the root of all knowledge. Wherever I would go away, you'd know because all knowledge begins with you. And the root of all knowledge, that's the root of all knowledge that we had been discussing. David HaMelech is really making the point that the Ran made earlier. He's saying my whole concept is explained by David HaMelech, that the human being's knowledge is all from external stimuli, and God's knowledge is the knowledge behind the stimuli. The Ran then went on to explain that everything that was created was an evolvement, that every day of creation became more sophisticated. And the Ran even went so far as to say that the creation of the first day was really a prelude, was an introduction, a preparation for what was to come. He went on into the secrets of the lights that were created on the first day, and then he explained the evolvement, what we might call the evolution of creation, how things got more and more sophisticated with every day of creation, how it began with more base elements and then it evolved into more sophisticated things that were created. The Ran went on to explain that the human being was created on the same day as all other living creatures, and God purposely created Adam on a day that he also created animals, because every creation, every day of creation was another level of sophistication. But the human being has the capacity to be worse than animals. And animals, they can be cruel, but they do it because they have to eat. A lion devours because he has to eat. He doesn't go around killing for nothing. A human being can be godly. A human being can be worse than animals. And that's... Right. So that's why, says the Ran, Hashem said, on the one hand, I create the human being last because he is the most sophisticated. On the other hand, I don't give him a separate day for creation because he has the capacity to be worse than animals, so I'm creating him on the same day as the animals. Why was he put in the Garden of Eden? That's so that he would focus on connecting to his Creator, so that he would connect, he would understand, he would develop in his understanding. The Ran then went on to explain what was the concept in the Garden of Eden, how did Adam die? So he said, technically, the fact that Adam died from eating from the forbidden fruit, that brought death to the world, that wasn't a punishment. The Ran said, when God created man, God created him with perfect balance. Perfect balance was that the spiritual part of man was much more powerful than the physical part of man. And that's why man could live till eternity. Because the spirit is eternal. Even now that man dies, his neshama lives for eternity. What God did when God created man was God created him weak physically and strong spiritually. The forbidden fruit, as Eve correctly testifies, made her feel healthier, made her feel stronger. She was right. It was food that would give greater strength to the physical, and so the strength, the physical overpowered the spiritual, and that's why God said, okay, now you've become more physical. You've strengthened the physical now that you've eaten from that fruit. It's not that it's a punishment that you will die, it is a natural derivative of your action. The punishment we find is everything else. God says, you'll have to work hard to eat, I'll kick you out of the Garden of Eden. A lot of things were punishment. Death was not one of them. Death was just a natural cause and effect. If you strengthen the physical parts of life, well, the physical is passing. I created you where the spiritual was the more potent part of your life. You strengthen the physical, and that's what brings about your death. He discussed the reason for the enmity between man and the snake, and he said that the reason the Torah begins with this story is to let us know foundations, fundamentals about the Torah. One of the fundamentals is the concept of Olam Haba. And Olam Haba is not mentioned overtly in the Torah. But the concept of Gan Eden is an allusion. The Torah shows us that there is a capacity to give greater reward than this world. And here the Torah, so to speak, at the very beginning, at the onset, lets us know of this concept, the concept of Garden of Eden. And just like one of the fundamentals is Yetziat Mitzrayim, and through that we understand that God is connected to us, God made miracles that the sorcerers couldn't replicate, so too the Torah had to give us this concept, the concept of the Garden of Eden at the very beginning of the Torah, because it's one of the fundamentals of the Torah. The Ran then went on to discuss a big question. The Torah says, keep my mitzvos, we're going to read this now, keep my mitzvos, perform my mitzvos, for it is your wisdom. Because what nation has God so close to them like you? The nations admire you because I'm so close to you. So the Ran had asked, why is it that when the nations see our statutes, the mitzvos that seemingly have no logic, why would they admire us for that? The Torah says, watch the statutes, keep kosher. The nations will admire you for keeping kosher. What's so admirable about that? The statutes are mitzvos that we don't understand. Why does the Torah says, be careful to keep them, for they will admire your wisdom? So the Ran said, if a doctor talks to a person and says, you know, you have the following illness, eat the following fruit and you'll get cured. The guy eats the fruit, he gets cured. The next time he comes to the doctor, he tells him, okay, this time stay away from this food and you'll get cured. He stays away from the food, he gets cured. Every time he comes to the doctor, what the doctor tells him, he listens to it and he sees it works. Then one time he comes to the doctor and he says, you know, I have a terrible cough. The doctor tells him, okay, stand on your head for three minutes every morning. The guy thinks to himself, standing on my head, how's that going to cure anything? But then he says, you know, he's been so smart and everything else, it must be that he knows something I don't know. When someone tells us something that seems completely ludicrous, so then if the person has proven himself to be an intelligent person, so we say, it's because I don't know enough. That's why it seems ludicrous to me. If the person hasn't proven himself, so then I think it's, what does he know? The Ran says what the Torah is telling us is, when the nations see the wisdom of all the other mitzvot, they see what a beautiful life the Torah gives you. And then they see the Torah tells you some mitzvot that you cannot understand. Then they look and they admire. They say, ah, this is a godly religion. Our religion only tells us things that we understand. Here, you see God's in the picture because it's things that they don't understand. And when we look at the whole picture, we see there's so many brilliant things in the Torah, so then these things must be because we don't understand. And that's why the Torah says, these mitzvot are the mitzvot the nations will admire. The Ran said, and the Torah didn't have to speak about the world to come, but rather the Torah gave us all kinds of concepts that from the stories in the Torah we understand undoubtedly that there is a world to come. Because if Avraham Avinu had a doubt as to whether there was a world to come, what's he binding his son for? The Akedah. How could he stop his life and think, well, we'll move forward from here? God told him to do it, but if he understood there's a world to come, so the world isn't finite. There's still more to come. So right now, God told me Yitzhak ended his service over here. He has to move on to the next world. We had questions in understanding this, but that's the way the Ran explained it. He also discussed the Koheles, when he says this whole world is for naught. What's the concept? The concept is that there's still a world to come that is not for naught. Now, the Ran says, and that's why the Torah also began with recounting creation, because this is one of the fundamentals of the Torah. By the same token, the Torah concludes by telling us all the miracles of Moshe Rabbeinu. It says, L'chol ha'otot v'ha'moftim, because the miracles also show us that God is continuously watching over us, and God is promising us, I will take care of you, keep the mitzvot. And this is the concept of Hashgacha Prati, Tzachar V'onesh. These are the concepts that the Torah is alluding to when the Torah concludes the Torah with the miracles that Moshe Rabbeinu did. And that's basically the first drasha in a nutshell. Obviously, if it took us a year and a half to do it, so in 20 minutes we'll just get Rashi Prakim, but that was the first drasha in a nutshell.